8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Knotfest.com presents Talk to Me. With over 300 interviews under his belt and 6 years running, your host Joshua Toomey interviews metal and rock's heaviest hitters. Follow the show at Talk to Me Talk. Here's your host, Joshua Toomey.
All right, guys, let's welcome CJ Pierce and Jason Moreno of Drowning Pool to the Talk to Me podcast here, knotfest.com. CJ, Jason, great to have you guys on the show.
Thanks for having
us. Yeah.
Awesome, man. Well, let's start out with the new album. Obviously, the single out, Mind Right. And you guys couldn't have picked a more perfect time to kind of release a track paying homage to Pantera when a Pantera tour is being kind of reunited tour being announced. So, man, talk a little bit about getting Mind Right together.
Yeah, all that kind of fell into place just naturally. You know, we spent a lot of time working on this record. We worked longer and harder on these songs than any other record. And, you know, back again when, unfortunately, when Vinnie Paul passed away, you know, we're doing Drowning Pool. I wanted to have something just musically, and of course, vocally, just everything in this band that kind of has, you know, some Pantera flavors on it. You know, Diamond and Vinny were such great friends. They were such great guys to us for years and years and years, man. And, you know, just kind of keeping that Southern metal feel alive. Again, just sprinkles here, a little bit there. And that song, Jason can tell you the story about how that came together on the record. Almost didn't make the record, actually. It's pretty crazy. Wow.
No. So, it's pretty liberal when we're selecting songs for records. We all, you know, suggest an even amount of songs. And for whatever reason, Mind Right didn't make the list. So, mid-studio, just had to sneak attack that song. We let the producer hear it, and he fell in love with it. And next thing you know, it's our first track out, so.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
That's the short version.
You got to record this. It's awesome. It's got that, you know, that Pantera flavor to it. We didn't want to cross any lines or, you know, you never want to get like, oh, you're trying to rip them off, these kind of things. It's nothing like that at all. It was just us writing how we write, you know, doing what we do. And you know, what would Don do here, what would Vinny do there? Just, again, just an homage, as you said. And keeping that style of music alive, still doing what we do, sounding like Drowning Pool. And that's exactly what we did with Mind Right.
Jason, growing up in that area, man, what did Pantera kind of mean to you?
To me?
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's when I knew I wanted to be as heavy as I could be. Yeah, I'd never heard anything. I'm sure I'm like everyone else in the world. I never heard anything like that. And to know that they were, you know, local, because you would see them around town. They were always super cool. So it had a huge impact on me. I got the tattoo. Can you see it? Cowboy. Yeah, there you go. So you know exactly what I'm talking about. Like, we're all like,
there we go.
Indoctrinated and assimilated. So I don't know. I feel like Pantera, man, has influenced everything I have ever done musically, just to sum it all up, you know?
Yeah. It's that feeling, that vibe that you get, not necessarily like technically the music as much as just the intensity. Mm-hmm. Of how they came across, just raw, just kings of metal.
Well, I know when Phil, when I heard that, you know, that beautiful singing voice, and then he'd get all heavy, man, that was my style, man. I knew right then, oh man, I got to do that. I get whatever he's doing, I got to do it. So.
Yeah, there's a lot of kind of differences on the Pantera, you know, tribute, celebration, reunion, whatever you want to call it, man. Are you guys like me, where it's like a little skeptical on the whole thing, but I'm also a first day ticket buyer?
I know we all have our opinions on that. This is how I look at it. I just think it was worded the wrong way. That's all. I mean, it's a reunion of Rex and Phil, but it's a, you know, it's paying respects to Pantera and their style. I mean, dude, Zach Wild was out on tour with us. We were told it was Damage Plan, Hatebreed, Drowning Pool, and Zach was out on the bus for like a week straight partying. Like, we're all friends. Zach's friends mm-hmm. with Don, Vinny, with everyone. And you couldn't pick, you know, a better group of guys to play those songs. And there's people that's, you know, younger generation who hasn't had the chance to see Pantera. And I'm excited because, you know, I know all those guys and we're friends with them. So, you know, it's again, it's, you know, it's a, you know, a reunion of two guys, but it's
right.
You know, it's paying respects to Pantera and what it is. And you couldn't pick better guys to play, you know.
I mean, for me as a fan, I'm happy, you know. I don't want to get into the politics of it and the right. opinions of it. To me, it's a celebration of the music, and whatever happened between those guys had nothing to do with me. And it's an opportunity, as CJ said, like, my kids came up on Pantera. They love Pantera, but they never got to see Pantera. So in a celebration of the music, I can now have that bonding experience with my kids when I take them to go see it. So that's where I stand on.
Yeah, I've said it a million times on the show. This will probably be the last time I say it, but when I see the show, I want the logo on fire. I want the lights. I want the pyro. I want everything. I don't want all the cabinets, man. Yes, everything, man. I don't want it half-assed. I want to see a Pantera show on stage.
Same here, man. I'm supporting. I know, because, you know, again, like Jason said, you know, friends with all those guys,
right.
know them personally, and I don't see any reason why it's not a good thing to pay respect and perform.
CJ knows everyone.
No, not everyone.
I get jealous, man, because like I'm in Drowning Pool, but I don't know anybody, and that's not a bad thing. So I could still, you know, maintain my fandom, if you will. So, you know, as a fan, you know, Black Label and Anthrax, and we're all fans of everybody involved, you know.
Oh yeah, I mean, like earlier today I did an interview with Dave Snake Sabo of Skid Row, and I'm still on cloud nine, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I love Skid Row's like one of my favorite bands of all time, and I've been doing the show for 7 years now, and I still feel that way. Even though, I mean, not that, you know, you guys are chopped meat or anything like that, but you know, like when Dave Snake Sabo pops up on the screen, you're like, holy shit, man, that's crazy.
Yeah. This guy's iconic, man. That's some badass tunes, dude. That's some awesome tunes, man.
I was waiting for CJ to be like, yeah, I know that dude, man. We hang out.
I'm going to text him right now.
Well, you know Sebastian. I've had some crazy times with him not that long ago. And also, yeah, man. Sorry. I'm just gonna go like off in the tangent. I'm just gonna leave it at
that. So that's what these shows are for, man. So Strike a Nerve, first album in roughly about 6 years, man. So what was kind of taking so long and to get a record out?
It's a twofold thing. The first part of that was we spent a lot of time writing after our last tour and recording. We wanted to put out an amazing record. Not for Drowning Pool, Look at Me and Look at Us, as much as like, you know, we went into this record. We want to write great songs for people to listen to. Anyway, you're driving your car, you got some road rage going. What song are you going to put on? You're working out at the gym. What song are you going to put on? You know, we're musicians, songwriters. We want to write great music together. And we took the time to do that on this record. And then right when we're ready to put it out in 2019, obviously COVID happened. So we had to put that on the, you know, back burner and wait it out. As we did. So that's the reason why it's been 6 years for this record coming out. But in the process of writing this one, there's a lot of cool things that we've done new in this band, which I think is amazing. First thing, because Jason writes music, I write, Stevie writes, Mike Luce writes, we all write together as a band and we put these songs together, and that's what you get as Drowning Pool. And we, you know, we made this decision, you know, all the songs every write, every single part on every song, all four of us are sold on it, happy about it, you know, because you have a lot of different ideas coming in. So one thing I love about this record, I love every single song and riff and idea that everybody brought in through and through. And the another thing that we did as well that we just kind of fell into with Jason Moreno, he's got an amazing voice. He's got such a wide range, as you know, back in the day with Plastic Tongue and Suicide Hook. Some of those songs were in like E standard and stuff. And, you know, we traditionally just Drowning Pool with just me. You know, I like to write and drop C and drop B. But realizing, you know, Jason and how amazing he is in his potential. It's like, why don't we try these in different keys to see which song and what key allows Jason to convey and express what he's feeling, you know, not be kind of held down to like, all right, this is in drop B, but I'm feeling this and I really need to be up in this register. So we explored on a lot of these songs, different keys to see which one worked best for the vocals, if you will. And there's five different tunings on this record. It's pretty badass.
Oh. Yeah, when I was listening to, to Mind Right earlier, kind of Spotify will just kind of take you on a little journey, and Hallelujah came up, and Jason's voice on that was just blowing me away. Like, just how, like, just like you were saying, like the vocal range there, because I had heard Jason obviously through Hallelujah, but also on the Cyberstar stuff that he was doing with Billy Gray and, and things like that. So it was kind of all over the place, but man, that, that his vocals on Hallelujah were just blowing me away today.
Thanks, man. I can't sing like that anymore. So, but.
What mind frame were you in at the time? Seemed like an AJ while he was singing.
Oh man.
My music's aggressive anyway. So, you know.
So when it comes to Jason, when it comes to writing the lyrics and everything for Drowning Pool and for what you guys are doing, man, you know, where do those thoughts and ideas come from for you?
Everywhere from, you know, first thing, you know, how do I say this? Drowning Pool is not the most, you know, positive, uplifting message band. You know what I mean? Like, it's not to say that we don't feel positivity or we don't try to spread uplifting messages, but typically within our music and our expression, it's, you know, it's metal, it's angst, it's aggressive, it's angry, stuff like that. So when I'm writing lyrics, it's usually I'm channeling whatever has really got me down and frustrated at that moment in time, whether it's, you know, political or personal or environmental or just anything that's going to trigger you. I try to inject that into my lyrics, but I don't try to be so, you know, on the nose with it, because I don't necessarily want to, you know, push my agenda. So I keep it vague. I know that's not really saying a whole lot of anything, but, you know, the other side of it is that I'm not the only one that writes lyrics. You know, CJ writes lyrics and Stevie writes lyrics and Mike will write some lyrics. So
what are you doing? Let the drummer write lyrics, man.
He wrote, there's a song on the record called Hate Against Hate, and we were struggling with the chorus. Felt like it was missing something. We needed something to vocally to tie it together. And he just came up with it right there on the spot, and we tracked it, and that was it. So I don't know. Drummer's writing lyrics, man. There you go.
Cats and dogs hanging out. Drummer's writing lyrics.
It's awesome that we have so many ideas and we bounce them off each other, especially at this point in our career. Jason's been in the band for 10 years. Our career's been the span of 20 years. He's been in the band, you know, the majority of that. And we've still got the new guy.
Always forever the new guy.
Forever. Even though you've been in the band.
Gray beard, but he's the new guy, right?
Right.
The most records we ever recorded, the most songs we've ever written. All that stuff's been with Jason. And no, it's good, man. Like you said, like we all get along, we're all great, we're positive people, but if we play metal, it's aggressive. There's a whole bunch of things that sent on this record, but I want to talk about Stay and Bleed. We played this last night. Song that we have, and laughing already.
Yeah.
So where we pulled stuff from, and this is one that we pulled some from you know, real experiences. Like a lot of these songs are very true and real to stuff we've had. So Jay and I, man, we had a long flight. We played in Guam out of all places. Guam. We did stuff for the USO.
Right.
And, you know, long flight. Everybody's tired, hungry. And Jay and I just, we got off the bus and there's all these people there, man. We just kind of got into it. I don't know when, how and why. And he just said, you do you and I'll do me and stay the fuck away. And it just stuck with me. And a couple years later, I'm working on this song and it just fit right in there. And I'm like, we're all good and stuff. And it's like, Jay, remember that time you said that thing? It fits right here. You want to do it? So we do it. It's in the song. And it just, because it was a real moment. It's aggressive. Like, and you feel it. You do, you stay away. Wow.
So you can say that. But if anyone ever asked me, you know, what are those lyrics about? I'm never going to tell them. And I was really pissed at CJ. And I'm
like, hey, we wrote a song about how mad Jay was at me. And
I wrote the lyrics about how mad I was at this dude.
But it was great, dude. And it's well,
that's a great
it's a
story.
Fucking moment. So, like, now we have a song, and, you know, like, we played it last night. We started rehearsing for the tour coming up last night. So, all this stuff is doing. I wouldn't say, you know, fresh, but it's just like getting a new set together. And it just feels good. It feels good. It's a strange way to express it. Like, you know.
You told me right when I first joined, you know, brother's fight, man. Brother's fight. Nah, man, we're going to be best friends. You're right. Brothers fight.
Yeah. Brothers fight, but you know.
A lot.
A lot. But we get it out. It comes through in the music and it's real. And then, you know, get on with it. And like, here we are. Happy's gonna be our records finally coming out September 30th. Finally, 6 years later, man. We worked so hard on these songs, dude. And they're, like I said, every song is a real deal, like real situations. It's not fantasy lyrics. It's like, you know, we take what goes on in our lives, like Jay said. We're an aggressive band. We're a heavy band. So that comes across in the music, comes across in the lyrics.
What does Mind Right say to you? What do you, when you hear Mind Right and you hear the lyrics, what do you think it's about? I know what I think it's about. Hell, I know what I wrote it about, but I never gonna tell you. So.
Well, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm not a lyric guy, so... So I can tell you I can tell you the riff all about. I can tell you all about the riff.
See, you and me both, man. Like I told you, I didn't foresee myself being a singer, so I'm not a lyric guy either, man. A melody guy.
I was watching the Master of Puppets lyric visualizer the other day, and realized I've sang majority of that song wrong my entire life. You know.
Yeah.
Because there's the, well, I mean, not majority of the song, but there's the part he said where I always thought he said rich in misery, but he says ritual misery. And I was like, never knew that. But so yeah, lyrics, asking me about lyrics is probably the last thing to be talking about on the show.
I think we all experience that. You know, you go to concerts and you hear some of your favorite bands and you just, you hear what's going on, but you also, you feel a certain way and you interpret the song a certain way. So you kind of replace or just hear lyrics a little different to fit what your mindset is, how you interpret the song, which is fine and dandy and cool with me, man.
Well, shit, these days you got to be vague and you got to keep it close to your vest, because if you tell people what you're really saying, you get canceled, man.
You know, you strike the nerve when you say how you truly feel. Pissing people off by being, hey, saying how you feel about stuff, man.
Mm-hmm. So we were talking a bit about, you know, Skid Row or whatnot. And, you know, when you hear a new Skid Row album in 2022, you still want to hear a 1990 Skid Row album. Like you want to hear that classic sound. So Jason, when you approach Drowning Pool stuff, do you still go back to what Dave did and think about what he did? Or is it just a clean slate for you every time? Do you try not to stray too far from maybe what he would have done?
It's always a clean slate. I think we're fortunate because Dave and I came from the same scene, cut our teeth on the same influences at the same time. So it makes sense there'd be likenesses. So I don't really have to think about what would Dave do at all.
Right.
Live, I have always made efforts to honor his legacy. And I don't, you know, intentionally try to inject a lot of myself when I'm singing Dave's songs. But writing, it's natural, man. Snatcher, we come from the same place, you know, just like CJ and Steve and Mike and, you know, Dave, we were all together in the same pot.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. A little bit on Dave. I mean, you know, the 20-year anniversary of his passing was just a few days ago, as we record, and just the outpouring of my Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and everything else were just all these classic photos of Dave with fans and Dave on stage, and just you know, even the big news outlets like Revolver and things like that were posting tributes to him, man. So how cool was that for you to see, CJ? I know you posted about him too that day.
Yeah, it was it was great to see all that stuff. I got to be honest, you know, it is 20 years. It's a monumental time. You know, it was, a great friend. It was a great bandmate. You know, it's how we got started. We got started with Dave. There was a big legacy that started at the time. It's, you know, I was doing good all day long, but in the evening, it kind of started kind of getting into the head a little bit, but all positive things, man. Like we had a great time. Dave was a great dude. He was, you know, he wanted to be a singer in a rock band, and he grew up at the school of, you know, Diamond, Vinny, and Pantera. Just, you know, he was always out talking to fans. He was just always on the scene. He was at every show. That's why I got the name Dave Stage. He actually went on stage and, you know, sang. Dude, he just jumped on stage with everybody, bro. He with Skid Row, and he sang with those dudes. He sang with everybody. And he was just a lover of music. You know, very unfortunately, he passed away 30 years old, cardiomyopathy, heart disease. But here we are 20 years later, and knowing Dave and knowing his love for music, and knowing that he, you know, we did shows together with Jason, like we all know each other.
Mm-hmm.
This is what Drowning Pools have evolved into with Jason. metal band, keeping it going. And I know he would be proud. Like I said, him and Don would be proud of us for doing this, for sure, man. And we're doing
that. I just had Chris Ballinger of Flaw on the show. We did a live show here in town, and he messaged me the day that the 20th anniversary, and he said the toughest thing on him when Dave died was the fact that the Ozfest just kept going. Like, there was no, like, the train didn't stop. It was just like, you just, the next day they had to play a show, and it was like the strangest thing and the hardest thing for him was just kind of keeping going on that tour.
Yeah, and the El Nino guys were on that, you know, we're good friends with those. We just did a tour with them earlier this year. And Dave Chavari, you know, they hung our banner. They flew it for the rest of the tour. They had the drum full center backdrop. It was really cool. Those guys. Everybody was
in it.
It was a strange day for me. I don't talk about it much. I haven't really said much about it, but I didn't know what was going on at the time that that happened. I was in my hotel room, was getting phone calls. Nobody, I didn't know what was going on. So I'm walking through the hotel and people are crying, hugging me, and I have no clue what's going on.
Right.
I walk outside, there's helicopters and there's police. And it wasn't until I got to the bus that I found out. So I didn't really think, you know, you don't sit around and think about these things. But that one, you know, kind of got me a little bit. But again, you know, so many great stories. He did so many great things with Dave. He was a great guy. And, you know, it's awesome that we, you know, we pay homage to him. We, you know, we play Bodies every night. We keep that going on. And here we are now doing our own thing. We got Jason and this new record coming out 20 years later. Same time, man. And it's, dude, it's you know, you're going to get hit with some hard hitters, man. It's a jamming record, dude. We were out. Like I said last night, we're in the room rocking them out, sweating. Wow. Man, love it.
What's the upcoming tour? You said you're rehearsing for tour.
Yeah, we have a tour. It starts September 26th in Memphis, Tennessee. We're playing with a band called Through Fire and a band called Black Satellite. It's going to be another band that's going to join us. I'm not sure who that is because one band dropped off, but we'll have another surprise guest on there. But yeah, man, it starts in September and October, and then we're going to do some more shows in November, December. Support the record, yeah.
Times. Yeah, the last thing on Dave, and then we'll move on. But yeah, I mean, I sent you that photo of me and Dave, like what, June of 2022 or 2002, Jesus Christ. But yeah, it was just crazy to, you know, that was my 23rd birthday. We look over at the bar. I look over at the bar, and Dave is just sitting by himself at the bar having a drink, and we're like, dude, come over. And he was like, he lit up, you know, he knew the whole table because it was all the 12 of the Good Earth guys. And then I think you guys ended up coming down too. You guys were staying in the same hotel. We just happened to be, you know, going and celebrating my birthday at, man. So great to, you know, great closure, I guess, for me and to have one good night out with Dave.
Yeah, man. I'm glad you had some good times with him. That's right.
Nice. God, and we'll definitely have some good times again on this upcoming tour.
Yeah, man, come hang out with us. When's your birthday?
Well, yeah, it just happened. You just missed it.
Birthday celebrations next year.
Yeah, next year's birthday celebration. Well, maybe Primer 55 can do the upcoming Drowning Pool tour.
Come on, let's do it.
Come on with it. That'd be rad.
Jason, when it comes to the live stuff, man, what songs do you what are your go to like favorites to play live?
Well, it may sound cliche, but it's absolutely true. My favorite song to play live is Bodies.
Okay.
Because, you know, you just, the energy in the room, because it's the last song we play, obviously.
Right.
And by that time, we're all tired and sweaty, and it's been a long night. But we play Bodies, and it's like hit and reset, and everyone goes absolutely bonkers, and it's so much fun. It's just, it's undeniable. So that's my favorite song to play.
Yeah, it's a fun song to play, man. I don't know what some bands get weird about.
The hit. Song
it's a fun song.
Like
yeah, that's right.
We did a USO, and I think we opened with it, and then we played it in the middle, and then we played it again at the end. So there have been sets where we played it multiple times.
Yeah.
So definitely that's probably our go-to, not just mine, but.
The only time I saw Alice Cooper live, I think he opened and closed with School's Out.
Oh,
yeah.
So,
there you go.
So that is a thing. You guys have kind of brought up the USO stuff a couple of times, man. How did you guys first get involved with the USO stuff, and what does that kind of mean to you guys?
We got involved in it actually in 2006. And there was a, you know, 971 Eagle station here in Dallas. They had a band lined up that couldn't make it, and they called us last second, which was awesome because Bodies had already kind of taken on a life of its own with the troops. and we got hooked up with them, and it just makes a difference. You know, for people who are not in the military, I mean, you get stationed at different places, especially overseas, you know, in Iraq or Kuwait. I mean, you're literally just in a sandbox. Some people are stationed there a year, 2 years, 3 years, and you don't have access to much. So to bring a rock show to them, make them feel like they're at home again, is awesome, dude. It's nothing like in the whole world. You just, you know, it's you know, a rock band and just people, rock bands, regardless of the situation, just having a great time. Yeah, man, it's one of the, I love doing it, man. We've been doing it since 2006, and we kind of got pushed off, obviously, with COVID, but we just started getting back into it. So hopefully we'll have more coming up in the future.
What's a crowd like at a USO show? Is a lot of people like, are they just excited to see you guys? Are they fans? Are they you know mosh pits and all that stuff breaking out?
The pits are insane, and the energy is like none other. And there's just no alcohol, you know. It's the troops in the desert, but that energy and just that feeling of like connective, it's the sound of connection you have and feel like you're at home and you can just let loose. It's like none other. And not everyone there is like, it's not a drowning pool show, if you will, but they're just, you know, I mean, they're music fans and you just, they need some kind of entertainment, man. They do know that people care about them, people thinking about them, and they're at a rock show. And it's insane, dude. It's like the best response ever.
And when you go to play these shows, are they the, where they bring you in heavily guarded on the helicopter and all that? Well, are we talking like that?
2006, when it was, you know, active war, they did. You know, had to sign some waivers, but it was kind of cool to have a truckload of people in front of us and behind us just fully loaded. I mean, I never had to consider like that before. Everybody's got guns and they're like, got to take care of the band. But that was 2006, 2007. Now it's not, you know, as crazy unless we want to go play in, you know, someplace close to Russia. We would probably need some guards. But no, man, it's all, you know, Middle East is kind of not like it was before. It's pretty chill at the moment. We'll see what happens.
Let's talk recording the album. Are you doing home studio stuff? Are you going to the studio? Are you guys all in a room together, just sending tracks and any of that stuff?
Yeah, yes. We did this record. Yeah, we did everything together with Sean McGee in his studio in Vegas. But again, with Stevie and Jason, Mike, myself, we all have Pro Tools and we all bounce ideas, you know, to each other. We'd play stuff down at the house and raw ideas. We get in the room and kind of hash it out, and then, but it all comes together in the studio. And Sean McGee has been great for us, man. He's one of my favorites to record with. Looking forward to doing another record with him. Hopefully, we'll do the next one with him as well. We really connected on a lot of levels. He's kind of on the same page with us musically, and he did the good thing, the producer thing, where he's, you know, the outside ear pushing you like, that's cool, that's terrible, don't do that, do this, you know, try this, try that. You know? We tried a lot of different things out on this record, which was great. You know, we wouldn't just like going in with the blinders on. We definitely pushed the limits and tried a lot of different things. I mean, it's still in your face metal band. But
you talk about Sean?
Yeah, talking about Sean. Yeah.
Sean's a dark wizard, man.
Yes.
The dude is magic. He hooked us up. You go record a record, man. Go to Sean McGee. That dude is awesome.
How is he pushing you vocally? Was he
How did he push me vocally? You know, he didn't really, he's kind of has an unassuming demeanor. You know, I've worked with some producers that have been kind of, not mean, but just, you know, abrasive. I'll say abrasive. You know, they got shit to do and Tom's money. And Sean was unassuming in the sense that, you know, he didn't make it sound like he had an agenda. It just felt like one of the homies and you're in there. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. He pushed me in the sense that it was almost like a positive reinforcement is what I'm trying to say. You know, and man, we worked hours and hours and hours. I was leaving the studio with migraines, just pushing so hard, but it didn't really feel like work because we were just in there making magic. You know, just the vibe of it was really laid back and cool, and I trusted him. Yeah, so we could push each other, I guess.
Yeah, it's a great relationship with Sean, especially with Jason vocals, because we had the ideas there, but it was like, hey, why don't you try this vocal? Why don't you try this melody? What if we try in this key? And Jason, like you said, he was all over. You're in there singing 6-8 hours a day. You're going to leave with a headache. I mean, you're just in there like, ah, okay, try this one. Oh, try this one. You
know, like, he had the lyrics and he'd follow along. And he's like, you know, how about we strike this lyric or repeat that and, you know, try this harmony. And, you know, he really put me through the paces. But his demeanor was just so, like, team player. And it didn't really feel like cracking the whips or anything. It was cool, man.
Yeah.
Do you like the studio? I know some people like the studio. Some people hate the studio. Where are you at on that, Jason?
It's a labor of love. I really enjoy, again, and it sounds cliche, but I enjoy watching it all come together. I enjoy the like alchemy of it, if you will. I call it magic because it feels like magic. You know, we work these songs up as far as we could take them pre-production. So you think you know the song, and then you inject just, you know, one other, you know, outside perspective, and the whole thing changes, and then you get this whole new product. So I love the studio when you're working with the right producer.
Right. Yeah.
And if not,
yeah, I love it.
Then it's not so much fun, but you know.
What's the kind of, you don't have to name names, but what's the horror story you're kind of alluding to there?
Okay. So I'm not knocking on anyone. You just got to speak right. The same language. Right. So I was on a record trying to, you know, find my footing within the industry, if you will. And I just couldn't get to where I couldn't get my voice sounding the way I wanted it to sound. So funny enough, I pulled up some Pantera, played it for the producer and said, I want my voice to break like that. I feel like I'm doing it right, but it doesn't sound like that on playback. And homie was like, sounds the same to me, bro. And I was like, okay. So, I think that's my biggest horror story is when I'm, you know, I'm just not speaking the same language or not vibing, you know. It's not so much of a horror story. It's just
okay.
A nuisance, an inconvenience. I don't know, man. Could have been a, you know what? It is a damn horror story because I hear that record back and I still get pissed about the way the vocal sounds. So.
Shit. Where are you at on the studio,
CJ? I'm not saying any names, man.
Hey, no, I didn't ask for names, but
it could be one of three records.
It could be one of three.
And we know it's not the one I did with Sean. So.
And it rhymes with... No, I'm just kidding. CJ, you a studio guy, though?
I'm all about it, man.
Yeah.
I'm in it right now, man. I love studio work, man. I love it when it, like Jason said, when it comes together on the end product and all the little small things. I'm really big on the small little details. Again, we're drawing a pool. It's a metal band in your face, but if especially with this record, if you put the cans on, you'll hear so many little accents. Not that we're like an electronic band or anything like that. There's a couple things going on in the background, but for me, especially with this record, because we have the time, I just like sounds to accent what Jason's saying. There's a lot of songs where, you know, there's a line that Jason says, caught up in this machine. So when it says machine, I have like this, like, you know, computer-y sound.
Oh, yeah. Machine. Oh, nice.
And we have a song called, you know, Rope, you know, Leave Me Enough Rope, and have the sound. So I did do a lot of stuff on this record where it's more of a headphones thing where there's sounds to accent certain lyrics that were said. Again, nothing that you need live or in your face, but it's, you know, when you put in
CJ's being hard, modest. He owns his own studio. I paid CJ when I was still in my other local band and I recorded some vocals at CJ's studio. So yeah,
recorded Suicide Hook before we got together, man.
And the whole time CJ is like,
like, do it again. No. Yes.
So actually the guy that you were talking about that produced your vocals that wouldn't listen to you is actually CJ. That's the twist.
Oh, I see what you did there. Sorry, bro.
Figured it out.
Hey, you said it, not me.
No, it wasn't me, man.
Yeah.
Was it?
Yeah. Now I've got you all paranoid. No, yeah. How many times, CJ, would somebody come to you and be like, I want to sound like this and play Pantera? And you're like, yeah, we get it. You're a heavy band from Dallas. You want to sound like Phil Anselmo.
I love recording. I love working with bands. It's been a minute since I've done something recently because, you know, we have other stuff going on. But no, it's nice. It's nice being outside of here. And I've been in that position before, producer, where you listen to what, you know, a band's trying to do and help them convey what they're trying to say. And again, with Sean McGee, he was perfect, man. He's been like one of my favorites. It's not the favorite producer to work with, where you have, like, I can just play and not think about anything else. And he can just be outside of you like, oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. No, I don't about that part, man. Maybe you should try something, you know. Also, like, to have that safety net of someone steering you in the right direction to get to where you want to go. So we definitely have that on this record, and it comes out on it, man. It really does. You'll hear it.
Well, nice, man. Well, we'll leave it there, man. Strike a Nerve out September 30th. Looks like you'll be at the Machine Shop. What an incredible venue for you guys to be at on release date.
Monumental, man.
Yeah, such a great club. Anything else to tell about the album before we get out of here?
It's gonna punch you in the face.
Let's get ready. Punch you in the face.
If you're trying to go to work in the morning and you're late, put on the new record. You get there faster. Mm-hmm. You're working out, trying to get some extra pumps in, put the record on. You're road raging, put it on. If you're in a bad mood, you want to get happy, listen to Drowning Pool. That's my sales pitch. That's all I got.
Yeah, it was pretty good. It's good. More than I had. I think
again, we got in the room last night and started hitting on a lot of, you know, we want to rotate.
I can honestly say that. You surely did look happy, man. You did is smile last night. So if anything, it's an honest record. I've said it before. I'll say it again. I'll say it as many times as I need to say it. As far as Drowning Pool and what Drowning Pool does, if you're into that, this is the perfect record for you because we hit our stride. It all came together on this record. And I know that every band says that, but damn it, it's true on this record for what we do.
No, we really hit on all four cylinders on this one, man, for real. We want to deliver something great for everybody to listen to, first and foremost, a song for what you need and us enjoying what we do while we're doing it. There's no smiling in metal. I'm over here just, I'm so happy.
Hey, man, there's nothing better, man, when everything comes together and you just get that big shit-eating grin on your face, man.
Yeah. CJ, last night, all night.
All night. Just, let's do it again. Do it again.
Play it again. All right. Well, CJ, Jason, man, thank you guys for taking the time here. Talk to me, podcast.notfest.com.
Hey, thanks for having us. Later.
Yeah, man.
All right, man.
The Talk to Me podcast presented by NotFest.com. Follow the show at Talk to Me Talk. Be sure to subscribe, rate the podcast, and leave a review on your favorite podcast app to get the latest from the Talk to Me podcast.